change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello, this is Mickey Desai. I'm your host for this episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm looking outside and it's a beautiful day in Atlanta, Georgia. And in a minute, we're going to ask my guest how the weather is in her part of the world. I am lucky to be talking to Monique Salinas today. Monique Salinas, PhD, is the principal of Ascend to Greatness consulting firm. Did I get that right, Monique?
That's correct.
And you're in Grand Rapids?
Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And how's the weather?
Hey, it's like an early day in November. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
The sun is shining.
Fall
is cold.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Fall is definitely setting in.
Oh, yes.
I'm excited for this topic today because I love this subject matter very much. We're going to talk about board culture, and we're going to talk about a couple specific things related to board culture. In the notes that you sent, I like the first thing that you wrote, which was, and we may actually use this for the title of the episode, Nourishing Your Nonprofit Board for Maximum Effect. I think that's a fantastic title.
Oh, great.
Yeah. But the next thing you said in your notes kind of shocked me. And you say most nonprofit organizations have a love-hate relationship with their board of directors. And why do you say that?
Well, I say that from experience. I have 21 years of nonprofit experience. I founded two nonprofits, mm-hmm. so work with a wide variety of boards. I also talk to a lot of colleagues, and then I have my clients that I'm working with right now. And it just seems to be, number one, I think that there's a lack of education on who should be on the board. I know this is quite funny. When I started my first nonprofit back in 1997, I didn't know anything, seriously, anything about doing a nonprofit. I had just finished my PhD in music education, and I knew I wanted to have a choir with girls who sing. So I said, and then I have to have a board? What? So I went to my family and my friends and said, hey, you want to be on a board? You won't have to do any work at all. All you have to do is come to one meeting every other month. That's all you have to do. So consequently, I had a board that didn't know what they were doing because they didn't understand what a board was for. And you had an executive director who didn't know what a board was for. So let me tell you, it was quite a hands-on education. Quite a hands-on education. But luckily, I was able to learn from my many mistakes. So things got better. But also, you have these boards then, many boards, that are pleased and passionate about the mission, but they have no education on what they're supposed to do. And the ED is usually doesn't know what the board is supposed to do. And they don't take the time and spend the money to bring in a professional who could really help them improve their relationship and understand exactly what's expected of the board, what's expected of the nonprofit, and what's expected of the executive director. So that would solve a lot of problems if they would just get some training and education. The third reason is that sometimes it seems like there's not a coordination, collaboration, partnership between staff and the board. It's like they're running on two separate track trains when they should be on the same train. And consequently, there's not a lot of information communicated to the board, or the board doesn't get it in a timely manner. So the board doesn't feel connected to the organization or the staff, and the staff can't understand why isn't the board helping? Well, it's because there's not a good sense of communication. Also, I have noticed in my experience that boards often have, most boards, not all boards, most boards have two tracks they go on. One, it's a hands-off attitude. And they don't do anything. They're there to listen, to put in their 1 hour every other month, and they feel that's what they're doing and that's their contribution and that's all they do. And they can still put it on their resume that they are a board member. On the other hand, equally frustrating is the micromanaging board that tries to run the whole organization, which makes you wonder why they need an executive director. They're constantly hounding the executive director. They're making comments on the color of the t-shirts that were picked. They're critiquing the executive director on the font used in a newsletter.
Right.
You know, they're just, they have their hands in everything. And creates a lot of animosity. And finally, I would say, you got the board member that's been, has the institutional memory and has been there for 25 years.
And yet
dream of leaving. Right. And yet in the bylaws, it says a 3-year term, twice renewable. And they don't even follow the bylaws.
Right, right. Of course.
So,
so let's revisit a couple of different things here. You said something early on, which was, oh gosh, what was it? You said that you set up a couple of organizations and you made a lot of mistakes.
Yes.
I was about to ask you for examples. Could you remember any of those mistakes, growing up? I want to use the term growing up.
I want to say everything I named. That's how I know it. Asked my friends and family to be on the board, never got professional training, never got the education, never educated the board. We never had a board retreat. We never had a board, this is early in my career. We never had a board training. I thought the organization was mine to run and the board was a necessary evil. So I never communicated with them. And then they didn't feel part of the organization. And then they didn't want to stay, or that contributed to doing nothing.
Right.
I also once had a board, extremely micromanaging, who went in and interviewed every member of my staff to ask them how they felt about me.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah. And so, what can I say? There's one nonprofit in here that has had the same board president for 20 years that I know of.
I'm kind of flummoxed by that. I'm like, how do you get away with that when you have a legal document that says that's not allowed?
Because people don't read it, and they don't enforce it, and there's no accountability.
Right, of course. So let's say you run into another nonprofit that has some of these existing circumstances. How can you help turn that state of affairs around? What would you recommend?
Well, I just had a wonderful board retreat that I ran this past Saturday for a board with similar problems. And we started at the very basics. You know, first of all, you have to recognize that board members are dedicated, for the most part, believe in the mission, are good people. They just don't know what they're supposed to be doing. So what's the best way to modify that? Is to train them what's expected. Without animosity or condemning them, but instead recognizing all the goodness and passion they bring. And then you say, let's work together and come up with a board and a relationship with the executive director that will only contribute to doing even more good things. So everybody feels good.
Right.
You know, nobody feels like, oh, I've screwed up or I failed. No, we're just going to get better. So, we talked about board member attributes, and we talked about not asking friends or family, but to look instead for people who are passionate about your mission, who have connections to resources. That's really important. They don't have to have all the resources, but do they have connections to resources? Can they introduce donors to the organization? Members who are positive. Okay, this is really important. Members who have time to come to board meetings.
That's true.
Another
That's
bad thing.
Yep.
The organization I happen to be work with meets 4 times a year. And for 2 of those meetings, the board chair's in Arizona. Well, that's not going to work very well. And yet he's been doing this for 5 years. So you want to have board members that have time to devote to the organization and are racially and culturally diverse. So once you've got an idea of who you want on your board, then you want to write up what the board member expectations are and put it in the contract and sign the contract. The board member agrees, I will miss no more than 25% of the board meetings. If they can't commit to that, then they shouldn't be on the board. So we talked about that. I learned that again the hard way. Another important good thing is to provide that governance retreat run by a professional so that everybody starts out or gets back on the same page.
So because you don't think a board should run their own retreat? They need a third party?
Depends what state the board is in.
I tend to agree with you, but I wanted to just explore that for a second. Why would you tell a board that they shouldn't run their own retreat?
Because board members are not knowledgeable in nonprofits. They're mostly not knowledgeable. They're your CEO of a corporation. They're your biggest donor. They're your a school administrator. They know everything about what they know, but running a nonprofit takes a special skill set. And you can learn it hands-on, and that'll take you about 5-6 years, and you'll make a lot of mistakes. Or you could just learn it from the beginning.
Right, with some actual
training.
Get
off running.
Right.
Get off running. So that's why I think a professional should do it. This goes back to a point that you said, and I can't tell you how many nonprofits never even look at their bylaws. From the board to the executive director to the staff, they look at their bylaws as a legally necessary document that goes on the shelf, and that's the last time it's looked at. It's amazing what good can be in bylaws, and also what not so good can be in bylaws. I just worked with a nonprofit. Their bylaws say they only need 40% of the board to be there for a quorum.
Wow, I've never seen that.
That was in their bylaws.
Yeah.
That's okay. Just like, no, you have a minority of the board making all the decisions for the organization. No.
Yeah.
I read another bylaws that said in one portion of the bylaws, in the beginning, it said board members will receive no compensation for the service. 3 pages later, it said the executive committee can determine compensation for board members. It's just crazy.
Someone forgot to proofread the boilerplate.
It's crazy, but yet that's what was filed.
Oh my goodness.
So it's very important to read those bylaws, and if they don't fit, you can amend them because they're legally binding. You can go to court. An employee can take you to court if you're not following the bylaws. It's a legally binding document.
Yeah.
So that's important. And this too is really important. I think micromanagement is worse than an uninvolved board. Because you get people, well-meaning people who know nothing about the organization, the industry that they're working in, and then come in and tell you what to do.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's right.
And that's just, and then you're fighting them because you know that's not proper, and they're fighting you because they're the board. And it's just, and you're the board's employee, and it's just, it's a mess. So I say, the minute micromanagement seems to be happening, you need to bring it up at a board meeting. The executive director should be an ex officio member of the board, non-voting member.
Right.
And bring it up as soon as it starts, have a honest, vulnerable conversation and nip it in the bud. Because once it gets to be part of the culture, you got a lot of problems. And finally, I think this is really important too. How do you handle an uninvolved board? usually an unevolved board does not feel a connection to the organization. They don't feel ownership. They may wonder, what am I here? I'm not making any difference. So what you want to do, also, if a board member has been there a long time, this often happens. A board member has been there 20 years and they want out. They are tired, but they feel guilty. If I quit, who's going to take my place? I'll be leaving them hanging. So you have to have really, really good communication. The executive director and the president have to work together like a well-oiled machine. They have to have a great relationship. They have to communicate frequently, and they have to figure out how can we turn our uninvolved board into a board that is passionate and feels ownership of the mission.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I would think that the uninvolved, at least the passion part, can be solved with recruiting, maybe. I knew one board that was, they dealt with a visually impaired cause. And so they only picked board members who were touched by visual impairment in some way. And that seemed to help at least organically tie them directly into why their mission was important from the get-go. But if you don't have that requirement, then what would you suggest are ways to keep board members connected to the mission?
Okay. First of all, have them be volunteers. That's have them work in the organization and see the good. When you have your board meetings, always include a mission moment where you bring in somebody that you've worked with, you have a story, you have a little video, so they can see the results of their work. That mission moment is really important.
I like that. I like calling it a mission moment. I think that's brilliant.
Yep. That's really important. The other thing is I would talk to them on a one-on-one basis and find out how they want to be involved. Don't guess how they want to be involved. Ask them, do you feel that your talents and skills are being used to the max for us? And they'll probably say no. Then you work with them, communication, how can we involve you more? What can we do to get you more involved in our organization? Maybe so it's coming in and spending a day at morning in the office helping out. Maybe it's meeting the staff. Maybe it's being a volunteer. You see what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely. Would you say it's the executive director who asked those questions, or is it the board chair who asked those questions?
Depends on if your board chair is involved.
Sometimes
the board chair is uninvolved too. So actually, it should be both. I think it should be both. Like I said, I think the board president and the executive director are a well-oiled machine, and together they can perform miracles.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Before we wrap the episode, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you about, which was the lack of communication between the board and the staff, or how do you set the expectation when it seems like the two different groups are operating on two different sets of rails? What kinds of things do you recommend boards do to address communicative problems like that?
Here's what I would do. First of all, I would have depending how often the board is meeting, I would meet with the president, the executive director, and president, have an individual meeting once a month, once every 6 weeks, a friendly, go to coffee, get a glass of wine, sit down and chat. How are things going for you? How are things going for you? You know, so that there's an atmosphere of support, collegiality, and respect. So I would do that first. The second thing that I would do is I would send out a newsletter, maybe a quarterly newsletter to board members.
Oh, okay.
Telling
so
them,
something like specific to the board. Yeah.
Yeah. From the staff, from the ED. This is what happened. We touched this many kids' lives. We raised this much money. We need help in this area. Just want to let you know what's going on. Because a lot of board members complain, well, we don't even know what's going on. But if you send out, and once you got a template, it takes you 15 minutes to do. So it's not hard. And the executive director doesn't have to do it. They could assign it to the whoever's in charge of marketing, but give the information to the person who's in marketing, and the person in marketing can pretty it up and send it out. So that's really important for communication. Another thing is to tag when you do a social media post, tag your board members. So that media post goes right to the board members.
Right. That, yeah. Right.
So those are some things you can do.
I mean, it's hard to get a board out of its entrenched problems, isn't it? I mean, there's no magic wand scenario that suddenly in the space of a one-day retreat solves a communicative problem for a board or changes the culture Correct. Of the board. So what then do you do? Do you send a board home with homework? How do you help them make sure they transcend their cultural problems?
You have to be totally honest with each board member. And if I were the president and the executive director, presuming the president's not the problem, often the president is a problem, and meet individually with each board member and ask them, do you truly want to be on this board? Sometimes they don't want to be on the board, but they haven't been invited to leave.
So ask them the hard question.
Ask them the hard question. Do you really want to be on this board? There's no hard feelings if you want to leave. You know, we appreciate, but it's how it's handled. You don't say, why don't you just leave? If you're not interested, why don't you just leave?
No, dear board member, dear board member, please get out.
Yeah, even though you'd like to do that. But you
right.
thank them for their service, and you tell them that you want to meet their needs and the needs of the nonprofit. And if both needs are not being met, what can we do to solve the problem? And maybe that's a generous, gentle way that they can graciously and gracefully leave.
Yeah, we did something similar once with a board that was starting to embrace its fundraising responsibilities. It was clear that the board was looking forward to making some changes, but there were clearly people on the board who didn't want to make the ask or didn't want to go through their friends and associates to make the ask of them. And so we gave them some options. We said, if you can't make an ask, then do these things, you know, give us the names or the contact information and do the warm introduction thing for us. Mm-hmm. But some people didn't even want to do that. And they very graciously stepped down. And in some cases, they even more graciously helped recruit their replacement, which I thought was very nice of them to do.
You're just being honest and recognizing board membership isn't for everyone. And sometimes people feel stuck and you're helping them get unstuck.
That's a good way to put it. Monique, if a listener wanted to contact you for any reason, how would you suggest they do that?
They can go to my website, www.ascend, A-S-C-E-N-D, Salinas, S-A-L-I-N-A-S .com. Or just call me, 616-890-1164.
I love it. Thank you, Monique. Thank you for being so accessible. And thank you for taking the time to do this recording with me today.
I'm happy to make the world a better place through better boards and better organizations.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us for this episode. We invite your support of our efforts via Patreon. Please find us at patreon.com/nonprofitsnapcast. In the meantime, we'll see you with another episode in a few days.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.